Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 82 of the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. Today, Scott Caulfield joins the show. Scott is the Director of Strength and Conditioning at Colorado College. He directs the oversight, development, and management of individual and group strength and conditioning programs for all student athletes participating in the college's Division two Division I programs, which are men's ice hockey and women's soccer, and 15 Division III programs. He's been involved in fitness and athletics for more than two decades, including his position at the NSCA from 2011-2019. He utilized those 20 years of under-the-bar lifting and coaching experience in a variety of different roles in support of the NSCA's mission as the worldwide authority on strength and conditioning. In this episode, we talk about Scott's role at Colorado College, his upcoming presentation at the Vermont NSCA State Clinic, coming back from surgery to coach or play, the brand new rink being built right now at Colorado College with a brand new weight room inside, his continued involvement with the NSCA. In fact, he is nominated for the nomination committee of the NSCA. And if you're an NSCA member, you can go vote for him today. Finally, wrap up with some rapid-fire questions, including Scott's favorite beach body exercise and what he misses most about real maple syrup as an implanted Vermonter in Colorado. Without further ado, here is Scott Caulfield. Scott, welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast. How's it going?
Great, man. Thanks for having me on. Excited to be on today.
Yeah, of course. Why don't we start, just for if anyone doesn't know you listening, give like the quick 30-second to 1 minute bio.
Sure. Well, Scott Caulfield, I'm the Director of Strength and Conditioning at Colorado College in Colorado Springs. We're a pretty unique setting. I think we're only one of maybe a dozen schools that have multiple division sports. So our ice hockey, men's ice hockey, women's soccer teams are both Division I, and then our 15 other varsity teams are all Division III. Pretty unique setting. And our academic schedule is on what's known as the block plan, which I believe there's only two other institutions in the country that follow a block plan. So very unique academic setting. And athletics are held in very high regard. We've had some really great teams over the years, so it's very exciting to be in this setting. Colorado Springs, great place, right in the, you know, at the foot of Pikes Peak, which is called America's Mountain, one of the 14,000 plus peaks in Colorado. So it's a great place, 300 plus days of sunshine. It's hard to beat.
Yeah, I remember everyone talks about when like college application thing comes up, like, oh yeah, but Colorado College has that block plan. How does that change what you do at all as a strength coach?
It actually fits really well into our kind of periodization plan, or you know, and why I say that is, so on the block plan you have four blocks per semester, eight blocks a year. So, but what happens in the block plan is you take one class at a time. So if you have chemistry, you would take that class in block one for 3.5 weeks, and then that fourth week is only Monday through Wednesday. You'd have your finals or presentations or papers due that fourth week, and then you have a 4-day weekend, and then you start block two. So instead of taking and juggling four, you know, 3 to 4 classes throughout the semester over 12 weeks, you take that one class for 3.5 weeks, and then you never have it again. So for some classes it might be a little bit like drinking out of a fire hose. You know, if you have organic chemistry or something, you have a lab in the afternoon as well. So some classes will have labs, so you have class, but the other nice thing, so from a strength and conditioning perspective, everybody has class at the same time. So we don't have a lot of people trying to come in all throughout the day. We know that like basically from 8 a.m. or 8:15 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., no one's training because everyone's in class. So we have that nice chunk of time to get our own work done. And then again, from a training perspective, you know, we can ramp up pretty hard and fast for 3.5 weeks or so. And then, you know, we have that fourth week as kind of a little small deload. And again, as the academic, and depending on what classes are in, again, academics are held in the highest regard. So, you know, those weeks we give a lot of flexibility to athletes that have class or tests or presentations. So it actually works really well from a strength and conditioning perspective.
It's a cool model. I never thought about how it would change what you do, but like, so I help out the NYU gym. I go to NYU and Division III, but a lot of the sports teams, like, they come in at different times of the day just because classes, et cetera. So do you, even with the Division III teams, is it Division II or Division III?
Three.
Division III. You get to see the whole team together, even if it's not necessarily their in season.
Most of the time, yeah. So we'll typically start around 6:30. We try not to do much earlier than that because, again, we know college kids typically are up late. And again, with a high academic demand, we don't want to give them any less sleep than we already do. But typically we go like 6:30 again to about 8:30 in the mornings, and then we'll have some flexible time in the afternoon. So my hockey team usually trains entirely together at 12:45 most days. But then that kind of like 1:30 to 3:30 is open time. So if you weren't able to make your lift with your team for whatever reason, we can fit kids into there. But most of, again, our team lifts are in the mornings or in the later afternoons from like 3:30 to 6:30.
And what's that like, having the one team, just the hockey team, be the Division I team? Do they get, I don't want to say more attention, but do they get like some special treatment that the other teams don't, or what's that like?
Yeah, well, talk in hockey and women's soccer, because of Title IX, we have two Division I teams. The Division I teams definitely have more resources. They're better funded, so they might get, depending on, who you ask, maybe they have more gear, or, maybe they get, I think for the most part, it seems like that, the athletes all are pretty well taken care of, even on the Division III side. So I don't see a whole lot of, jealousy or unfairness in that aspect. I mean, it depends probably on who you'd ask to, but it seems to be pretty fair and equitable across the board, so that they don't get, treated any differently.
And your role is director of strength conditioning. So do you work with all the teams or oversee parts of all the teams? How much of the time are you spending on hockey? Are you hands-on with the hockey team, or is it just kind of overseeing things?
Yeah, so the two Division I teams, hockey and women's soccer, are my two primary responsibilities. So those are the ones I'm totally embedded with. I'll be at games as much as possible. I'll travel with both teams to some degree. I'll be at practice if I can be at practice. But that being said, we do have a small staff right now, so I'm still also directly in the day-to-day with men's women's basketball and our men's women's track and field team, and the rest I've kind of tried to delegate to my other assistants. So still, again, eventually if we are able to add another staff member, which is in the plans, I'll probably, once we get that third person full-time, then I'll just do the two D1 sports and just be with hockey and women's soccer.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because on June 6th, which is a Saturday, we have the Vermont NSCA State Clinic. And because of the situation, it is going to be virtual. And so I thought it would be a great opportunity to open it up to everybody. And you're one of the presenters. Your presentation is called Coming Back from Surgery to Coach and or Play. Could you talk about the origin story of this presentation and why you're giving this presentation?
Justin Smith, my buddy at UVM and the NSCA state director, we chatted about it, and we actually thought it'd be kind of cool because in November I had a total hip replacement. So I have been kind of going through the motions or going through the process of being an injured washed up athlete. And I, finally got around to doing it. And then, through my rehab and kind of coming back, I had made really good progress. And I think, just being able to talk about, and just the more people I talk to, and whether that be because their age or where they're at, a lot of coaches are in need of knee replacements and hip replacements and stuff like that. And until you do it, there's kind of a lot of like, questions or uncertainties. So, you know, once I did it, and to make a long story short, basically, my doctor said it was the fastest he's ever seen anybody come back from a total hip replacement. They had kind of basically cleared me at like 6 weeks to basically do anything. I was on, you know, one crutch after a couple of days, and back down to a cane within the first, like, second week. So I made some pretty good progress. And again, I attribute that to being a strength and conditioning coach and just like taking ownership, though, of the, you know, rehab, of my rehabilitation myself, and not just waiting around for a PT appointment to do stuff. So I think that'll be my biggest message is like, look, if you're a coach or an athlete, you have access to the gym, you know, there's no reason to not be doing something every day that can help you on your rehab process.
Right. That's something we don't really think about when we get a rehab timeline for something for one of our athletes, maybe. We it's kind of like the industry norm, like it's what it normally is. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what it has to be. So is that kind of what you're going to be talking about?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And, you know, I mean, obviously, like, being my scenario too worked out. It was kind of right around some breaks. It was right around the week before Thanksgiving. And then with Christmas break, you know, I had a lot of downtime to, you know, do stuff on my own a couple times a day and just getting extra reps in, for lack of a better term. So it was just being proactive and making sure. But I'd go to my physical therapist. And the great thing is, you know, we have a door in our weight room that goes to our sports med department. So I'd walk over to our physical therapist every morning and I'd be like, okay, what do you got for me? And she'd tell me to do three or four things. And then I would kind of do that and come back to her and go, what do you think about this? Could I do whatever idea that I had for some other exercise? And she'd be like, yeah, try it, you know? And so, and then I would just keep kind of layering and adding on from there.
When you first knew you were going to have hip replacement, or right after you got it, what was your self-talk to get you to do more than just the normal to get back sooner?
Yeah. I mean, I think the hip is kind of like the easiest joint replacement from everybody I've talked to, and actually moving and walking when you have a new hip is like the best physical therapy that you can do. So it was really just like, you got to move more and you got to move often to be able to get this thing back the way you want it. And it was, and I mean, you know, and I made a fast recovery, but you know, at the end of the day, it still wasn't that fast. Like, there was still, you know, a process of those first few weeks that kind of were like, oh man, like I'm doing step ups on literally the, you know, the bottom step of a staircase. And like, you know, it's definitely you have to be able to really, you know, not worry about what you used to be able to do. And just like daily, you know, like I was saying, what can I add to this today to do more than I did yesterday?
Right. And especially hockey players, we all have to some extent some hip issues. Like,
right.
Ask a hockey player if they've ever hurt their groin or their hip flexor. It's common. And so this is something that a lot of us are going to have to go through.
Yeah. No, we've got a couple of our guys had already had their labrums repaired. Now, one of my guys right now is actually having surgery today on his labrum. So, I mean, yeah. Now, granted, mine is like, and mine's what they're going to be doing when they're 20 years from now. But at least like relatable, though, they saw me walking around with a cane this year too in the weight room after I came back, because I only took basically I had a week and a half off. So I had it Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I was out that week, and then I was off the week of Thanksgiving, and I came back that following Monday, and people were like, how are you back? You know? And I'm like, hey, walking is the best PT, so I'm here. I'm crutching around the weight room, and it was good, because the athletes are like, oh wow, he's going through same stuff that we go through. So it really, I think, helped from the aspect for them to see that and to see me put in the work that I had to put in to do my rehab.
Because it's going to be a virtual presentation, are you preparing any differently?
I was really trying to wonder how it was going to be different. I think my plan is that I really want to show a lot of the exercises that I actually did. Instead of like trying to play a video, I'm planning to try and do it live. So I'm gonna have to test drive that kind of beforehand because I know it's gonna be on Zoom. So got to make sure it's gonna be able to be seen and how it'll work. But you know, I wanted to do that instead of just having a lot of slides and text. I think it'll be, you know, especially us coaches who learn better by doing, at least seeing it in actual time will help.
Yeah, and there are going to be a lot of great speakers, and it's virtual. So even if you're not in Vermont, you can go. That's on Saturday, June 6th, the 2020 NSCA Vermont State Clinic run by, of course, Justin Smith.
Yeah, we hope it'll be good because, you know, some of these virtual ones have been getting more than you'd ever have had in person. I know, I think that was Wisconsin a couple of weeks ago, had close to 400 people tune in. I mean, it's really cool to see some of the how these virtual education things have been received by people.
It'll be interesting to see if this changes how we do clinics.
Maybe
there will be more online virtual options moving forward if we find out this format works.
I feel like it will. I think it's definitely going to change things to some degree, and it's probably good. You know, I mean, you're never going to be able to beat the in-person interactions, right? And the hallway conversations and the going out and having a drink and eating a meal with somebody, like, you know, that's the real benefit of the in-person clinic. And so you're never going to be able to replace that or take that away. But I think, again, all of these virtual ones are going to add a new layer and make people have to be a little more creative about the things that they do, events they put on.
Yeah, I agree. Let's shift to the new rink that you guys are building right now at Colorado College.
Super excited. Super excited. In February, we had the official groundbreaking. So it's going to be called Robeson Arena. It's the first time that CC Hockey has ever had their own, you know, arena. And it's literally on campus. It's right up the street from our other from our campus center and our athletic center and our weight room. It's going to hold about 3,400 people. But they've obviously done all the research on arenas all around and how this one's going to be laid out and how it's going to be designed. We're going to have kind of A to Z everything though for the athletes that we need, which is going to be awesome. So we have a entire sports med equipment room. We're going to have another weight room in there. So I'm working on designing and, you know, speccing out and getting all the equipment for the new weight room. That'll be, you know, really just hockey only in that new facility. So that was another huge reason that obviously the interest of me in taking this job was getting to build another weight room. And again, just with my experience having redesigned the NSCA weight room, it's a fun thing to get to do and put your name on. But I'm really looking forward to it. Like we told you before we started rolling, the current hockey arena that we have is about 15-minute drive away from campus right now. So it's really not convenient in many ways for our guys to have to travel back and forth to the arena and be there for so long, you know, with practice and film sessions and after needing treatment before and after practice. And, you know, they might be down there 5-6 hours and then having to come back and work on schoolwork and all that stuff. So it's going to be a real game changer for us to just to be on campus and just to have everything right there, including weight room, sports med, equipment, nutrition. We're going to be set up to do all our meals there. And like I said, they'll be able to walk there, which is just amazing.
So dog in the background. Love that. That's pretty exciting getting to design your own weight room. And you've done this a few times. What are some of the things you think about when making your own facility and making your own space?
Yeah, it's been really great because the coaches and I have such a great relationship. So, you know, they've given me carte blanche and to do what I want to do in there and, you know, just let them know how we need to do it. But, you know, you really have to look at the size of the space and that's the initial constraint or not constraint, but you know, it's gonna have to work in, and how we train is gonna have to work around that. So, you know, I'm trying to make it very multifunctional and cross-functional with having some turf in there as well as a weightlifting area, and just maximizing space. It's not huge. It's about 2,300 square feet. Of course, in a typical weight room, we got shafted with some pillars in the room, which is kind of tends to happen. I think every strength coach that gets put in an area, and so we're going to work around some pillars. But you know, we're making it to be the best utilized for how we train. And so, you know, we obviously need to have an area to do Olympic lifting variations and jumps and have a wall to throw med balls around on. So, you know, I'm working with Sornex, my buddy Dan McKim, who's great. And I've changed the layout on him at least 5 times already. And, you know, it's kind of a process of just kind of seeing the schematics and looking at things and moving things around a little bit more until you kind of get it right, that you feel really good about it. So I'm pretty excited about the way it's turned out and turning out. So, you know, and then yeah, working within the constraints of a budget. So not always, I'm sure some people have the luxury of really having unlimited budgets, but I know, you know, there's a certain number that I have to work around and be under, or, you know, right at. And so I'm really being cautious of that. And that's made me kind of change and edit some things and think about, okay, well, maybe I'm not going to do this, but I can do this. So it's definitely made it interesting, but it definitely, you know, the great thing is it's a brand new space. It's on an end. So, you know, we've got concrete walls that are built into it for throwing balls and stuff against and not having to worry. We've got high ceilings, and you know, it's going to be brand new. So, you know, that's the really exciting part about the whole thing.
It'll also be great for the guys to have their own space to and be able to warm up for practice in their gym.
Yeah. Yeah. Before games, after games. I mean, just the, you know, having that space to kind of get in and out of, be able to go. There's going to be a 10-person hot and cold tub in the training room. So to have the, you know, recovery and restoration methods that we'll have available that we just don't have right now. Because the other space is so small compared to this space. It's going to be, like I said, kitchen access and place to have meals or study right there. It's really going to be a game changer for the program.
I like talking about these sorts of things because it speaks to all of the skills that strength coaches may need to learn, right? Like balancing a budget, like designing a space or managing a space.
Yeah. And it's all, I mean, it's funny. It's all those things that you read about in your, you know, essentials of strength training textbook. And then you get thrown into the real world of it. And that's good, definitely good info to have, but you know, the realities of it too. It's nice to be able to have gone through that process and to have, you know, connections where, you know the right people to reach out to if you need something with the floor or some specific type of barbell that you wanted or some other type of training equipment. You know, it's really helpful instead of just trying to cold call and reach out to people. So I'm thankful that I've done it before for this project.
Yeah, of course, experience trumps anything on that. Last set of questions I want to ask you is about, because you worked at the NSCA for close to 10 years. And a lot of us are NSCA members, a lot of us have our CSCS, but we might not think about, at least I don't think about a ton, what the NSCA does behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's cool because, yeah, it's a great question because, you know, I was a state director in Vermont before coming out to the NSCA headquarters. I had been lucky, I think, you know, in some of my first interactions with NSCA events, just to meet people who, you know, didn't necessarily work for the NSCA, but were very involved. You know, they were the regional directors or some sort of committee members. And they basically, you know, kind of took me under their wing or said, hey, man, come out and grab a drink with us tonight after the conference is over. And just made me feel like that community aspect of the organization. And that's where I really kind of felt the need or the willingness to give back and to do more as a volunteer. And because the, you know, a lot of, some people know this and maybe a lot don't though, that the organization is primarily built by the volunteers. and the volunteers do a ton of different work. So many different committees, your board of directors, you know, the people who kind of have the 30,000 foot view. Those are all volunteer positions. You know, there's now, I mean, granted now at headquarters, there's probably about 70 employees that actually work at NSCA HQ in all the various departments, you know, conferences, education, membership, certification, the performance center where I used to run. So there's all these different kind of working parts up there. But there's far more people involved across state and regional directors and these committees who really, you know, help do so much of the work of the organization. And that's what I think is unique about it too, is because we don't go anywhere and the organization doesn't move forward without really good people being involved on the volunteer level. And again, that's for people who are NSCA members. If you see me on the nomination committee ballot, you know, that's why one of the biggest things that I thought, biggest pluses for leaving the NSCA and taking this new job was actually staying involved with the NSCA. And so I thought, wow, you know, if I actually leave, then I could run for the board of directors. I could be on these committees that, you know, I worked closely with, being the coaching education manager and the head strength coach. But it was different because I was just kind of doing the NSCA side work. I didn't have as much involvement as, like, if I, you know, am able to make it on the board of directors someday, I'll be helping steer the ship, you know, from the 30,000 foot view and really making a bigger impact, I think, especially given my experience from working there for so long, and my experience in the real, you know, in the real world back in the trenches of strength and conditioning.
You're running for the NSCA nomination committee. What does the nomination committee do?
Yeah, great question. I would say that it's arguably the most important committee that the organization has. So the nomination committee is kind of tasked with finding and helping recruit and select the people who will run for board of directors and president of the board of directors. So again, it's kind of a process because there's so many different boxes to check to be able to run for these high level positions. You have to make sure that people are qualified. So the nomination committee really helps find the best and highest quality people that can then run for the board and for the president of the board. So I think it's a very important position, especially to have a strength and conditioning coach, a collegiate strength and conditioning coach on. Because, you know, one of the things that we hear from a lot of coaches over the years is they feel that there's not enough strength coach involvement in the NSCA. And so to that point, I say, well, that's why I'm doing this, you know, and if you think that's a problem, then you should probably do something about it and not just talk about it.
What would you say to strength coaches who are interested in helping out at any level with the NSCA?
I would say it's definitely probably easier than you think to get involved. I think all state directors now have advisory boards, and that was kind of also created to help groom and make a pathway for people to become state directors. So I'd say if you're looking to get involved, reach out to your state director or your regional director or both those people. Ask about the advisory boards. Ask if you can help them with an upcoming clinic. Offer to present. I know a lot of times, you know, as a state director, again, speaking of experience, I was kind of trying to, you know, find people I knew or people that I knew to get them to speak, because it's not like at the national level where all these applications are filtered to you. You know, when you're in the state director and you're in Vermont and you're trying to get 8 speakers lined up, you know, that can be a tough gig sometimes.
And what do you think someone would get out of helping out? Obviously, the opportunity to speak would be phenomenal. But what else? Maybe just the networking?
Totally, yeah. The experience as a speaker, you know, which is huge, kind of getting outside of your comfort zone. But I think, yeah, like I said, and, you know, we've mentioned that the in-person experience, so networking, meeting other people. You know, when I was the state director in Vermont, I took over right after Paul Goodman, who was a head strength coach at UVM, left for the Blackhawks, where he's still there and had a pretty darn good run with 3 Stanley Cups, and still in such a great friend of mine. So we chat all the time. But that, you know, one of those state clinics, I met a very good friend of mine still to this day, who ended up hiring me at her club in New Hampshire called the River Valley Club. And that was a private sports facility that I went and ran. But we literally met and kind of hit it off at an NSCA state clinic. And that, you know, I would have never gone and moved down there. And then I ended up working at Dartmouth College, and then it just snowballed from there. So, you know, so many networking opportunities, and it's just fun. Like, you know, it's a good time to get out, meet other professionals and talk about what you do and learn some new stuff. And it's just a great opportunity to share information.
Absolutely. I want to wrap up with a couple quick rapid fire questions.
Right.
First one, ski the East or ski the Rockies?
Oh man, I'm never going back to the East. Ski the Rockies, or the snow is too good out here.
Do you guys still have snow?
Oh yeah, yeah. I skied a couple of weeks ago. I've got backcountry touring skis now, so I'm able to still get out a little bit, even though the ski areas are all closed because of this stuff. But yeah, there's still a good amount, and they'll probably still, you could ski pretty much throughout May if you're able to do a little backcountry. It's pretty nice.
That's cool. As a Vermonter, what do you miss most putting maple syrup on?
You know, and I don't know if you know this from being from Jericho, but my grandparents always used to do like a sugar on snow party, they called it. And so they'd just have tubs of snow, and you'd have like warm maple syrup, they'd pour in the buckets of snow, and you just eat it like that. And that's a Vermont thing, or maybe a Northeast thing.
Yeah, so good.
Can't do that anywhere else that I've seen.
Last one, one of the things I remember about when you spoke 2 years ago at the Vermont NSA State Clinic was you're like, yeah, I'm a meathead. I think that was the first sentence you said. And so as a self-proclaimed meathead, what is one of your favorite beach body exercises?
Well, you know, I mean, I have a program called named after me by my buddy Aaron Osmus and Pen and Paper Strength app called Coach Caulfield's Arm Farm. So I would be, you know, not doing myself justice if I didn't say that any good arm farm day is a good day.
So arm farm, everybody. I'm sure that's Googleable.
Yeah.
So everyone, vote for Scott for the NSCA nomination committee. If you're interested, you can go to the NSCA Vermont State Clinic on June 6th. And if you're in the Colorado Springs area, then check out the new rink once it's up. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome, man. We're going to be in there in the, you know, we're probably moving in some point in the summer of next year. They, like I said, it's super close. It's about a half mile from my house now too, where they're building the rink, and they've already started going vertical. So it's exciting to see it literally being built before our eyes.
Any parting thoughts? Where can people reach out, say hello, learn more?
Yeah, no, thanks again for having me on. Probably Instagram is where I spend the most of my time, probably too much time if you ask people, but at Coach Caulfield on Instagram. I am on Twitter at Scott Caulfield, but I do more, probably most of my time is spent on the gram.
Yeah, same. All the cool hip people are on Instagram. So exactly. If you're not on Instagram, you should get over there.
Yep.
Well, Coach Caulfield, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great to chat, and we'll talk soon.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys. Remember, if you're an NSCA member, go vote for Scott for he's running for the nomination committee of the NSCA. So go vote for him. You can reach out to him at Coach Caulfield on Instagram. And of course, go check out the site. Lots of new articles, new article on mindful cueing from Mr. Mike Stacey. We have lots of new content coming your way. So go check out the site today. Thanks, guys.